The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. I forgot that right at the very beginning of the show. This is going to be a long hour, I can tell. Anyway, where every week we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you live out what you really are called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind that you can sense when your money is aligned with your values and your convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there's really, really peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are also in sync with your values and convictions. The opposite is true. There's a lot of anxiety, and when you know that your money's not aligned with your values and convictions.
It's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all this information straight can be downright confusing, possibly even scary.
Yeah, that's right. And when you are confused, you simply don't make good decisions, right? At least that doesn't work that way for me. That can really help you keep, it can help keep you from being all that God wants you to be. And it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 8.
That's right.
Of Money and Mission. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
Co-hosting?
Money and Mission.
Money and Mission. It is co-hosting.
That's right.
Wow. Did you ever think you'd be doing a co-host?
The Jew.
No, never did. No.
But I'm Eric Terrio, and each week in this first part of our show, we will talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
And then part of the way through the show, we'll get to our weekly puzzle. And I think we're getting high marks on the weekly puzzle. This is a brain teaser. It's a puzzle that we'll share with you. And we don't usually know if the puzzler is actually interesting to anybody else, but it sure is interesting to us.
That's right. So, James, what do you think was a financial news highlight throughout this past week?
Oh, there were so many. Mm-hmm. I have this stack here. It's like inches thick.
There is a stack. What is all this?
There's a stack of things. But, you know, at the beginning of every month, there is a report on the jobs numbers that are reported in for the previous month. Mm-hmm. So a couple of podcasts ago, we talked about the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Mm-hmm. And the Bureau of Labor and Statistics reported jobs numbers for June. So the report came in showing a beat, which just means that the U.S. economy added more jobs than economists expected.
Right.
Which sounds really good, right, on the face of it.
Yeah, that's what they throw up on the news.
That's
normally
right.
In the morning we hear about.
And any time they report, hey, we added more jobs than we thought we were going to, it's like, yay, we're doing so good, right? Mark another one up on a scoreboard. And then we read down to, like, the very first paragraph that says, oh, and by the way, the April jobs report, which was also a beat, was somehow revised downward.
Interesting. So it wasn't as accurate as they initially thought.
Yeah, it wasn't as much as... I really wonder about that. But, you know, this report right here, the employment change for April, originally in April, the report was, hey, we added 165,000 jobs. And then it was revised down to 108,000.
108,000. That's almost 60,000 jobs.
That's a big number. Oops, we missed the number by 60,000.
Large discrepancy.
Right. In May, the original jobs report was, hey, we added 272,000 jobs. And then later it was revised down to 218,000.
That's, I wonder why.
That's enormous. It's over 50,000. So we'll see what happens. I think we should, we'll pick up on this report in a month and see how much the jobs report was revised downward.
Yeah, and this highlights the importance of not just focusing on the initial headline numbers, but also looking at the revisions to get a more accurate picture of the labor market's health.
Yeah, and you know, one question that people ask sometimes is where do they get these numbers? Right? Where do they get these numbers? And the bad news for today, I mean, this is going to be like one of those things, hey, we're going to keep you hanging until we report on this next week, right? But but the Bureau of Labor and Statistics report actually doesn't say where the numbers came from. But you know, but there are things like, you know, ADP out there and you know, payroll services that what they do is they look at the data that's turned in by employers to see, you know, did they add new payroll? And if they added new payroll, then presumably there's, you know,
and each company has an SIC code, so you'd be able to tell what industry that company falls into, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But you know, for really for next week, we're going to pull a little bit more. We'll get a little bit more in detail on that and just talk about where some of those numbers come from, because it is an interesting statistic. There's another headline that I saw just 2 days ago that said Americans are finding it difficult to find new jobs and to keep them. So with all these jobs being added, why are people having a hard time finding new jobs?
Right.
That seems like a valid question.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other one other question is, so we've added all these new jobs, and what was the actual quality of the jobs, right? Were they really high powered jobs, or were they part-time low paying jobs, or exactly what kinds of jobs were actually being added?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, you know, considering not just the quantity, but the quality. Are these jobs providing sustainable wages for benefits and workers? Or
that's right. And at the same time that we're adding all these jobs.
So where would you say that the biggest job gains have been?
Well, yeah, before we get to the biggest job gains, there was this note also that came in from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics saying that jobless rates were up year over year in 269 of 389 metropolitan areas. So we're adding all these jobs, but still jobless rates are up. And the same Bureau of Labor and Statistics is reporting both of those statistics at the same time. So that just seems a little odd, doesn't it?
Yeah,
we're I'm sorry. What was the question you had a minute ago?
No, I was just touching on what you said, the difference between the quantity and the quality of jobs.
Oh, right.
And these just on the paper, they just look like pure numbers. But what sort of sustainable wages or benefits are they providing for workers? Or is that just a metric we're pointing at?
Well, no, that's a great question. I think as you sort of drill into that, you ask, well, what sectors were these jobs? Where did they come from? So, you know, are these people who are, you know, spending a part-time working, you know, at a coffee shop, or are they high-paying jobs? Government actually added about 70,000 jobs.
Oh, the government did.
In June. And when we say government, we mean all levels of government, like federal, state, and local. So the average over the last 12 months.
Isn't that the largest employer? possibly in the world? Probably the country.
I think the government. Yeah, government is definitely the largest employer, dwarfing anything private sector. But what's interesting there is that on average over the last 12 months, government jobs added averaged about 49,000 per month.
Yeah.
And in the month of June, now the government added 70,000 jobs. So that's significantly higher than the average.
Yeah, and while government spending may be supporting the economy in the short term, what are the potential long-term consequences of growing government debt? You know, we need sustainable ways to promote job growth.
That's true. But what happens is when people go, and I know this is a debatable topic, right? But I'm going to say it anyway. When people work for the government, they're not manufacturing clothing. They're not manufacturing things that people buy.
They're just keeping the machine running.
Mm-hmm. So the more government jobs that get added, really that's inflationary pressure on our economy. So you can put a bunch of people to work, simply write them a paycheck, but then those people have more money to spend and there's fewer and fewer things for them to actually buy. And so it drives prices up.
Less production, more government spending.
That's exactly right. And the cycle goes around and around. So, and of course, government debt is already out of control.
Right.
So we talked about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get off of this topic, right? Because we only have 1 minute left and it's really not a lot of fun to talk about.
No, but it's really important.
It's really important. I think, you know, you had a note here that average hourly earnings only increased by about 10 cents.
Yes, I did see that. That raised some eyebrows.
Yeah, so wages are not really keeping pace with inflation. Interesting.
Yeah, and it's really hard to keep buying the things that you need for your family when just your paycheck isn't cutting the rising price of goods.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we really got bogged down in this news headline, didn't we?
We just weren't able to get to your whole stack, that's all.
That's right.
We got to some of the more important ones.
Some of this stack we'll save for next week.
Yeah. And, you know, and if we just aren't, I just think that there needs to be a more sustainable way to increase wages. That's what I think. But, you know, we're out of time in this segment. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss our topic of the day, which is that success must be measurable.
Measurable. Absolutely.
Stay tuned. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio. I won't mess this up. WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where we are talking every week about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And I am Eric.
And it's good to be here with you today.
Yes, it is.
I mean, we're recording, so we won't actually be with you because this will go out.
It's good to be here with Joe today.
To be here with Joe today. That's right. And, you know, we should invite somebody over. If you get the weekly puzzler correct and you'd like to visit here at the station when we record, you know, we'll pick like the third person with the correct answer.
That's right.
That's right.
And then we'll ask permission from the station afterwards.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, if there's only one thing that you take away from today's podcast, we hope that you will take away the point that if you want to be successful, your definition of success needs to be measurable.
That's right. So a couple of weeks ago, we started talking about defining success,
mm-hmm.
correct?
That's
and then
right.
talking about that it needs to be specific and intentional.
That's right.
And now this week, we're going to be talking about how it must be measurable.
That's right. And I think when we were talking about being specific, we talked about the fact that it needed to be written down.
Mm-hmm.
We said putting your definition of success in writing makes you 42% more likely to actually get to where you're going.
That's right.
But when you start writing things down, you've also taken a really important step towards making things measurable.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's a good step in that direction.
That's right. So writing things and putting things in writing is really important.
But it could still be garble on a paper as well.
It could be garble on a paper, like that Jobs report.
Keep that put away.
All right. Put the Jobs report away. We're on to the next segment here. But, you know, really, no, we think that measuring our progress is actually a biblical principle, even though most times we don't think about it that way. But think about this with me, right? All through the Bible, God had really specific standards for measuring whether or not people were fulfilling the plan that he had.
That's true.
Right? Think about Noah.
Mm-hmm. What, the ark?
The ark. I mean, that was really, really specific. It took him an amazingly long time to build it, but he could measure his progress.
Yeah, and that reminds me of the Ten Commandments. They're a clear set of rules with measurable outcomes. Thou shall not steal.
No, that's right.
Not very ambiguous there.
No, pretty clear, pretty measurable.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And in the very beginning, of course, Adam and Eve were told they could eat anything they wanted to, but just not the fruit of that particular tree. So that was also
very specific.
Really specific.
And measurable, not even one.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And we can think of other examples. Nehemiah, he was a Jewish leader, and he meticulously oversaw the rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls by assigning tasks, setting a timeline, and tracking progress.
That's right.
It's rather specific and measurable.
That's right. And I know, you know, last week I think we were talking about interstate highways.
Oh, boy.
Which is a far cry away from rebuilding a wall.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder sometimes.
Right? How specific and measurable are they being?
That's right. I mean, it took Noah over 100 years to build the ark. And sometimes I wonder if that's what we're doing on, you know, the 83 corridor or on the South Bridge, right?
The multi-decade expansion.
Yeah, that's right. Which is really probably not very funny, but somewhere there's a plan.
No, I drive up it every day. It's not very funny.
but somewhere there's a plan. The plan is in writing and it's measurable.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
So, and that's what's important.
That's right. So we understand. But anyway, back to the biblical text, to not get too far off. God gave people a plan for a tabernacle and a temple. So we would simply run out of time if we went through and listed all the different examples and stories where God had something really specific. So, so we think that when we line out a definition of success, we put it in writing, we're specific about it, and it's measurable, we think that is a principle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, imagine going on a road trip without a destination or even a map. You might enjoy the scenery for a little while, but eventually you'll start to wonder if you're headed in the right direction.
And how far. Right.
You know, having a measurable plan is like having a GPS for your financial journey.
That's right. When we were kids, you know, Mom, are we there yet?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
That's
are we
exactly there yet? Right. So we want to know, really. I mean, we have this inherent need inside of us to know, are we making progress in the right direction?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we said this already, but I'll say it again. If you take our advice from last week and you commit your plans to writing, then you will have started in the process of making a smart definition of success, that you will be making things measurable.
And now, what if they did miss it? How can they listen to
Oh, yeah, good point. Episodes. If you didn't have an opportunity to hear our podcast from the last couple of weeks, you can visit the Holy Family Radio website at www.720whyf.com. Did I get that right, Joe? And when you get to the website, click on the tab that says Resources, and then choose Podcasts. Look for the Money and Mission podcasts, and you can listen to all of them. I think, how long are they saved there, Joe?
Forever,
for posterity, right? So be careful what we say. But secondly, we're working hard at getting these podcasts onto the Wealth Development Council website as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's www.wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. I don't think we're quite finished with that project yet, but you can check periodically, and we'll let you know when we're finished. So
there's a button on the homepage that says podcast.
Right on the right side.
Just click that button.
Just click the button that says podcast. Yeah. So if you miss one of the episodes that we're talking about, many of the things we're talking about here build on each other.
That's right.
That's right. So if you miss something, you can go back several episodes.
Kind of like some of the sermons at church, where they, if you know, they pick up on a certain theme, and week after week they go over things.
That's right.
And if I miss it one week, I'm like, oh my, what were they talking about last week?
That's right. Yeah. So, all right. So you can go back and listen. And then you can kind of measure your progress as well in listening to all of the episodes. But, you know, someone, I just want to kind of relate this to the investment world.
Mm-hmm.
There was a young man that called me some time ago to ask my advice on a particular investment that he had made. This investment had a widely publicized reputation as being incredibly risky and having a lot of volatility. Okay. Fortunately, the timing had worked out really well, and his investment had increased in value enormously. It just went to the sky. And the question that he had for me was, well, what should I do? And I said, sell it, right? I mean, because you don't really make money until you sell something. And what was his response? His response was, well, why in the world would I sell it? You know, because it's making money.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question to ask him. But we all have to remember that the goal isn't just to make money, right? It's to achieve your specific financial goals. And if the investment has exceeded your target, maybe taking some profits might be prudent to protect your gains and reallocate towards other objectives that you may have.
That's right. Well, the problem here was that he didn't have a target.
Ah.
I mean, this is a very good point.
So he didn't define success in that situation.
He didn't define success. He had no idea where he was headed. And just like you said, if the investment has exceeded your target, but what if you didn't write it down? What if you had no idea where you're headed? Well, That became a really difficult question for him to deal with because he didn't have a measurable definition. And because he didn't know how to measure success in his investment, then he was stuck dealing with the many emotions that come at us all the time when we don't have a written plan.
Yeah, and investing can be an emotional roller coaster.
That's exactly right.
But like you said, having a measurable plan gives you a sense of control and helps you make decisions based on logic, not fear or greed.
That's right. And if you don't have that written out and you don't have it measurable, then what happens, unfortunately, it works like this. You wind up struggling emotionally. First, you wonder, is it time to sell? Will this go up forever? Well, only God knows how long anything is going to move in any particular direction. I mean, he doesn't share that with me, and I don't know that he shared it with anybody else either. So here you have this thing, money, which is probably important to you at some level, and it's invested, and you've got this investment that's going up, and you start wondering, when is this going to go down? And it starts nagging at you, and then you worry, and you get into a cycle potentially of just worrying, which is really not what God wants you to be.
No, not right? at all.
I mean, it's not a good spot. And if you don't have a target, maybe the market, you know, maybe your investment starts going back down in value. Then you're kicking yourself. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
Right.
And I know we talked about this before, the term loss aversion, where people tend to feel the pain of a loss a lot more intensely than the pressure of the pleasure of an equal gain. Measuring goals can help mitigate this, providing a clear exit point, like you said, whatever that target should have been.
That's right. So, but the reason we're sharing this really here and spending time on it is that this emotional stuckness that is so easy to get into when you don't have a measurable plan, It can just knock you out.
That's right.
Right. I mean, it really can. It can cause you to make bad decisions. It can hurt relationships if you've got this worry thing going on and so on and so forth. So you know, really we say if there's one thing that you take away, your success needs, your definition of success needs to be measurable.
That's right.
Please write it down and have a measurable target. Speaking of measurable targets, though, the clock is sitting here running, and
but I also know we have some examples, right, of folks that have achieved their definition of success. We'll talk about more later in the show, but I'll just start with one. Bill Gates, he had a vision for Microsoft, and that was to put a computer on every desk in every home.
Mm-hmm.
And he tracked market share and sales figures meticulously to gauge progress towards this goal, specific and measurable.
That's right. And we have a measurable target each week to do a weekly puzzle.
That's right.
And
we'll get that to the next segment.
We're running out of time as we can. You know, we're measuring, saying, oops, we're not on target for that.
That's okay. We'll be back after this quick break. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
Yeah. And we are co-hosting. And, you know, the main thing we're really talking about today is that your definition of success should be measurable.
Mm-hmm.
And we failed miserably on the measurable thing in the second segment.
No, I think we did great.
Oh, did you?
Hell yeah.
Because we ran out of time.
That's okay.
It was measurable. We did not get to our weekly puzzle. So we really need to cover that because we promised people every week we're going to have a weekly puzzle. Do you remember what the puzzle was last week?
I do, actually. It wasn't that difficult, even though some of these can be tricky when they're live on air.
A little bit.
But the puzzler last week was, what starts with the letter T, is filled with T, and ends in T?
Hmm.
A teapot.
Yeah. There you go. That doesn't have anything to do with money.
No, it doesn't.
No, or mission either. Well, unless... Okay, never mind. We won't go down that road. So hopefully you got that, and this week's puzzle, I'm going to have to go through this slowly. I have one. You have one. Everyone has one. If you remove the first letter, a bit remains. If you remove the second letter, bit still remains. And if you remove the third letter, it still remains.
Hmm.
What is it?
So I have one, you have one, everyone has one. If you remove the first letter, a bit remains. Mm-hmm. If you remove the second letter, bit still remains.
Uh-huh.
If you remove the third letter, it still remains.
What is it? Yeah.
Okay.
Send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com.
I do think I know this one, though.
And we will read the correct answer to the puzzle in next week's show. And we'll try to pick up and see if we can get somebody over here to visit with us in the studio next week when we're recording.
That's right. So let's pick back up on measurable, James.
Yes. I feel like we really went down a little rabbit trail there, but... measurable just means that you're able to measure.
Fair enough.
I mean, that sounds so redundant, but have you ever tried to measure something where you didn't have a standard to measure it against?
No.
You pull out a yardstick, you pull out a ruler. I mean, you need to have something to measure against.
Mm-hmm.
When you write down your plans and you write down your definition of success, and you've spelled out, this is where I'm trying to go, this is where I'm trying to be, this is what I'm trying to get accomplished, and you have a written plan, then that written plan provides the measurable framework, right, against which you can look at the results you're experiencing and hold it up against where you said you were trying to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Because without measurable success, you know, a lot of individuals can find themselves adrift in a sea of uncertainty.
That's right.
Unsure if they're making progress or just simply treading water. This can lead to missed opportunities, emotional distress, and even a misalignment of resources and your values.
That's right. It works like this. I was sitting in a board meeting for a particular organization, and the board was getting some coaching from this business coach who was trying to get the board more focused and on track.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about goals of the organization, everything. And this coach said that this is not specific enough. He used the word squishy.
Hmm.
He said, you guys are being squishy. We thought we had everything written down and laid out, but it was squishy. It wasn't specific enough. So it was not able to be measured.
Hmm. Interesting.
But there are many places as we get into finance and investments and different things, different areas related to planning, there are some very specific examples of places where it's so important to be specific and measurable. For example, knowing whether I am spending too much money on insurance, for example.
It's important to know.
Yeah. If I'm balancing out my cash flow. Remember, if I'm trying to either save up money or invest money or get from here to there, then I have to understand how my cash is flowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the B word that we all love to hate.
Budgeting.
No, I mean, really, because every dollar that comes in has to go somewhere. We can either spend the money to live on, or you know, we can pay debt with it or taxes, or we can put it somewhere to grow. But balancing that out has to be specific. The only way that we know if we're spending too much is to have a goal that we're heading towards.
That's true. And like you always say, you know, we should look at money as a tool. You know, it's a tool to achieve your goals, not an end by itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by having measurable financial goals, you can ensure that your money is working for you and your values.
And your values, doing what you want it to be doing.
That's right.
Right. Well, I mean, if it's doing what you want it to be doing as opposed to doing what somebody else thinks it should be doing, like the last sales rep that showed up.
Oh, well, that's true, too. But there's a very good chance they don't hold the same values.
That's true. And if you really measure where you're heading by all the ideas that different sales reps put in front of you, you will pretty soon be broke.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you'll have some good products and maybe you won't. But let's kind of pick up on that insurance policy example. And not only does a measurable goal help you know whether you're spending too much on insurance, but it helps you know whether you have the right kind of insurance and whether your insurance policies are actually doing what you thought they were going to be doing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week we said that even if you don't have a written financial plan, or let's say if you're running a business, a written business plan, if you at least just take each account that you have and each insurance policy, and you know, if you're invested in properties, I mean, just make a list of the things you have, and next to each thing, write a little sentence of, this is what I want this thing to be doing.
The account or product purpose.
The purpose,
mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, if you have a written out purpose, then periodically you can look at that and ask yourself the question, is this actually doing what I thought I wanted it to be doing in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So at a really basic level, it helps keep you centered. It helps avoid that scenario that we were talking about a few minutes ago where something seemed to be working, but oh my goodness, what should I do now? Right? Because I just don't have a target laid out.
That's right. Just like the example earlier in the show.
That's right. So knowing whether insurance policies are doing what they're supposed to be doing, knowing whether an investment that I've made is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. Knowing whether the advisors that I'm working with
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, especially with life insurance, a lot of those policies can be very complex. You know, over the years, there's so many different types of insurance policies, and it's so crucial to review your statements regularly and understand the various components, such as cost of insurance, cash value accumulation. I mean, folks, don't hesitate to seek help interpreting that information. It's very important.
That's right. But you can't measure that if you never look at it.
That's true, if it's just sitting in a drawer.
That's right. I mean, I can't tell you. We hear this periodically. Oh, you know, I bought this a while ago, and, well, have you looked at it lately?
Yeah, and some folks, they look at their policy, and the cash value is negative.
That's right, which we'll get to in a second.
Okay.
Joe, a couple minutes ago, said he was reading this devotional that encouraged him to stare at God and glance at his problems.
Oh, that's such a good one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Stare at God, but glance at your problems.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you glance, well, for example, let's say that you have this insurance policy. Like I actually
we're glancing at this policy right now.
That's right. We're glancing at this policy right now. This is not my policy, and fortunately, you know, I wasn't responsible for this, but it actually has negative value.
Mm.
I think if I pulled this statement out, I would glance, and then I would stare.
I mean, when the first time, especially to the untrained eye, right? Like the consumer, that can be concerning.
Right.
And it's important to understand why it's happening.
That's right. But when you set up an insurance policy, usually like there's this ledger that's laid out, it's filled with numbers, and it shows where it is that, you know, you may be years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And often, I mean, that's measurable. The numbers are laid out. It's easy to measure. But often, you know, people, again, will buy that and stick it in a drawer, and they'll never look at it again, never evaluate it. So interest rates may change, cost of insurance may change, different things may change. And if it's never reviewed, then there's no possible way that you can measure where you are towards a goal.
Mm-hmm. So how about, like you were saying, on some of the investment side? Talk about that for a minute.
Well, investments go up and down in value, like, all the time.
That's true.
Which makes it...
And volatility, correct?
Possibly more difficult to measure, right? Because when you lay out where you think you're going to be in the future with your investments, usually you can't just create a ledger that, you know, swings up and down all the time on a spreadsheet. The numbers neatly lay out in this upwardly marching, timeline, and it just looks like you have more and more and more, and that's what your projection is. But in real life, investments go up and down in value.
And when the market is soaring, it's easy to get caught up in the euphoria and think that that'll continue forever, right? But history tells us that markets are cyclical. They go up, they come down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, like you said, don't have a clear target when it takes some of the profits off the table, you risk riding that wave all the way back down, potentially losing those gains.
That's right. But you can't, you know, sometimes people will set a target and then they'll fudge on the target. The target's laid out, and then we get there and they're like, oh, I don't think I'm going to do this, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about that in our last segment today. But it's so important when you lay out a plan that you have to stick with the plan.
That's right.
Measure it and stay focused in that direction. Well, we are out of time.
That's right. We'll be back after this. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
Yeah. And we are co-hosting. And, you know, the main thing we're really talking about today is that your definition of success should be measurable.
Mm-hmm.
and we failed miserably on the measurable thing in the second segment.
No, I think we did great.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Because we ran out of time.
That's okay.
It was measurable. We did not get to our weekly puzzle. So we really need to cover that because we promised people every week we're going to have a weekly puzzle. Do you remember what the puzzle was last week?
I do, actually. It wasn't that difficult, even though some of these can be tricky when they're live on air.
A little bit.
But the puzzler last week was, what starts with the letter T, is filled with T, and ends in T?
Hmm.
A teapot.
A teapot.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That doesn't have anything to do with money.
No, it doesn't.
No, or mission either. Well, unless... Okay, never mind. We won't go down that road. So hopefully you got that. And this week's puzzle, I'm going to have to go through this slowly. I have one. You have one. Everyone has one. If you remove the first letter, a bit remains. If you remove the second letter, bit still remains. And if you remove the third letter, it still remains.
Hmm.
What is it?
So I have one, you have one, everyone has one. If you remove the first letter, a bit remains. Mm-hmm. If you remove the second letter, bit still remains.
Uh-huh.
If you remove the third letter, it still remains.
What is it? Yeah. Okay. Send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com.
I do think I know this one, though.
And we will read the correct answer to the puzzle in next week's show. And we'll try to pick up and see if we can get somebody over here to visit with us in the studio next week when we're recording.
That's right. So let's pick back up on measurable, James.
Yes. I feel like we really went down a little rabbit trail there. But measurable just means that you're able to measure.
Fair enough.
I mean, that sounds so redundant. But have you ever tried to measure something where you didn't have a standard to measure it against?
No.
You pull out a yardstick, you pull out a ruler. I mean, you need to have something to measure against.
Mm-hmm.
When you write down your plans and you write down your definition of success, and you've spelled out, this is where I'm trying to go, this is where I'm trying to be, this is what I'm trying to get accomplished, and you have a written plan, then that written plan provides the measurable framework,
mm-hmm.
right, against which you can look at the results you're experiencing and hold it up against where you said you were trying to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Because without measurable success, you know, a lot of individuals can find themselves adrift in a sea of uncertainty.
That's right.
Unsure if they're making progress or just simply treading water. This can lead to missed opportunities, emotional distress, and even a misalignment of resources and your values.
That's right. It works like this. I was sitting in a board meeting for a particular organization, and the board was getting some coaching from this business coach who was trying to get the board more focused and on track.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about goals of the organization, everything. And this coach said that this is not specific enough. He used the word squishy.
Hmm.
Right? He said, you guys are being squishy. We thought we had everything written down and laid out, but it was squishy. It wasn't specific enough, so it was not able to be measured.
Interesting.
But there are many places as we get into finance and investments and different things, different areas related to planning, there are some very specific examples of places where it's so important to be specific and measurable. For example, knowing whether I am spending too much money on insurance, for example.
That's important to know.
Yeah. If I'm balancing out my cash flow, remember, if I'm trying to either save up money or invest money or get from here to there, then I have to understand how my cash is flowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the B word that we all love to hate.
Budgeting.
Yeah. No, I mean, really, because every dollar that comes in has to go somewhere. We can either spend the money to live on, or, you know, we can pay debt with it or taxes, or we can put it somewhere to grow. But mm-hmm. balancing that out has to be specific. The only way that we know if we're spending too much is to have a goal that we're heading towards.
That's true. And like you always say, you know, we should look at money as a tool. You know, it's a tool to achieve your goals, not an end by itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by having measurable financial goals, you can ensure that your money is working for you and your values.
And your values, doing what you want it to be doing.
That's right.
Right. Well, I mean, if it's doing what you want it to be doing as opposed to doing what somebody else thinks it should be doing, like the last sales rep that showed up.
Oh, well, that's true too, but there's a very good chance they don't hold the same values.
That's true. And if you really measure where you're heading by all the ideas that different sales reps put in front of you, you will pretty soon be broke.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you'll have some good products and maybe you won't. But let's kind of pick up on that insurance policy example. And not only does a measurable goal help you know whether you're spending too much on insurance, but it helps you know whether you have the right kind of insurance and whether your insurance policies are actually doing what you thought they were going to be doing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week we said that even if you don't have a written financial plan, or let's say if you're running a business, a written business plan, if you at least just take each account that you have and each insurance policy, and, you know, if you're invested in properties, I mean, just make a list of the things you have, and next to each thing, write a little sentence of, this is what I want this thing to be doing.
The account or product purpose.
The purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, if you have a written out purpose, then periodically you can look at that and ask yourself the question, is this actually doing what I thought I wanted it to be doing in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So at a really basic level, it helps keep you centered. It helps avoid that scenario that we were talking about a few minutes ago where something seemed to be working, but oh my goodness, what should I do now? Right? Because I just don't have a target laid out.
That's right. Just like the example earlier in the show.
That's right. So knowing whether insurance policies are doing what they're supposed to be doing, knowing whether an investment that I've made is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. Knowing whether the advisors that I'm working with.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, especially with life insurance, a lot of those policies can be very complex. You know, over the years, there's so many different types of insurance policies, and it's so crucial to review your statements regularly and understand the various components, such as cost of insurance, cash value accumulation. I mean, folks, don't hesitate to seek help interpreting that information. It's very important.
That's right. But you can't measure that if you never look at it.
That's true, if it's just sitting in a drawer.
That's right. I mean, I can't tell you. We hear this periodically. Oh, you know, I bought this a while ago, and, well, have you looked at it lately?
Yeah, and some folks, they look at their policy, and the cash value is negative.
That's right, which we'll get to in a second.
Okay.
Joe, a couple minutes ago, said he was reading this devotional that encouraged him to stare at God and glance at his problems.
Oh, that's such a good one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Stare at God, but glance at your problems.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you glance, well, for example, let's say that you have this insurance policy. Like,
we're glancing at this policy right now.
That's right. We're glancing at this policy right now. This is not my policy, and fortunately, you know, I wasn't responsible for this, but it actually has negative value.
Mm.
I think if I pulled this statement out, first I would glance, and then I would stare.
I mean, when the first time, especially to the untrained eye, right, like the consumer, that can be concerning.
Right.
And it's important to understand why it's happening.
That's right. But when you set up an insurance policy, usually like there's this ledger that's laid out. It's filled with numbers and it shows where it is that you know, you may be years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And often, I mean, that's measurable. The numbers are laid out. It's easy to measure. But often, you know, people, again, will buy that and stick it in a drawer and they'll never look at it again, never evaluate it. So interest rates may change. Cost of insurance may change. Different things may change. And if it's never reviewed, then there's no possible way that you can measure where you are towards a goal.
Mm-hmm. So how about, like you were saying, with on some of the investment side? Talk about that for a minute.
Well, investments go up and down in value, like, all the time.
That's true.
Which makes it...
And volatility, correct?
Possibly more difficult to measure, right? Because when you lay out where you think you're going to be in the future with your investments, usually you can't just create a ledger that, you know, swings up and down all the time on a spreadsheet. The numbers neatly lay out in this upwardly marching timeline, and it just looks like you have more and more and more, and that's what your projection is. But in real life, investments go up and down in value.
And when the market is soaring, it's easy to get caught up in the euphoria and think that that'll continue forever, right? But history tells us that markets are cyclical. They go up, they come down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, like you said, don't have a clear target when it takes some of the profits off the table, you risk riding that wave all the way back down, potentially losing those gains.
That's right. But you can't, you know, sometimes people will set a target and then they'll fudge on the target.
Mm-hmm.
The target's laid out, and then we get there and they're like, oh, I don't think I'm going to do this, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about that in our last segment today. But it's so important when you lay out a plan that you have to stick with the plan.
That's right.
Measure it and stay focused in that direction. Well, we are out of time.
That's right. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.